If I were to go back in time and visit my past self, she would take one look at me and be horrified. She would be absolutely devastated at what she saw and what she heard come out of my mouth, and she wouldn't believe me. There's nothing I could say to my past self to make me believe my current experience because I wasn't
Yeah.
ready and that version of me didn't exist. And I always ask them, and I'll tell them this as well. Every single client that I work with, when they get to a point where they're feeling really good, I'll say to them, what words do you have that you think that your past self would have believed you or to describe the current experience you're having now? So I'm desperately searching for the right words because they're so hard, right? Just about all of them, they're like, there's nothing. There's nothing I could have said or done to explain this experience to me. I just have to have faith and believe that it could exist.
Welcome to the Binge Breakers Podcast. I'm Jacqueline. I am here to teach you how I overcame bulimia and my binge eating disorder, and how you can too. Through simple steps of mind management, repairing your relationship with yourself, understanding your habits, and intuitive eating.
Disclaimer, this recording is not intended to be used as medical advice, nor is it advice from a doctor. I am a coach, a recovery coach, and I offer advice from my own experience and my clients. But please, if you think you are in need of medical help, seek it immediately. We'll also be talking about subjects such as binging and purging, depression, and other sensitive topics. So if those trigger you, please listen at your own discretion. So hello, everyone. Welcome to the podcast. Today is an interview with Nina. I never asked Nina how to pronounce her last name, but I believe it's pronounced Nina Lavina, which is great. It's fantastic if that's actually a true last name. But Nina joined me on the podcast today. She is an accredited practicing dietitian in Australia, which was super fun to coordinate that time zone. And we talked a lot about one, ADHD and binge eating. Nina is a ADHD specialist and has ADHD as well. And we talked a lot. We were talking on Instagram earlier. And when she started mentioning these things, I was like, I have to talk to her about it, about how ADHD brains prioritize all tasks at once. Sometimes they have trouble understanding what's urgent, what's not. And then task swapping, task switching, initiating tasks. And I told her with my clients, sometimes I'll help organize their tasks into urgency, but she had a lot of good input on how to get a task started and how to switch from being in this zone to that zone, and lots of different helpful tips I hadn't heard before. So really great interview on that. And then we talked about being in toxic relationships and how that can impact people and how to get out of those things. Also about talking to your past self and what they would have thought of you now, and how there's really nothing you can say to your past self that would convince them to make the change, and you just have to go for it. And then had some really great advice then. So highly recommend this interview. I hope that you enjoy. And yeah, give it a listen. All right, bye.
When I heard your voice notes this morning, I saw them yesterday and I was like, I'm overwhelmed. But then this morning I like listened to them. And when you started speaking about not only the priority system and how people that have ADHD tend to see everything as urgent, it's like, yes, 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 that makes sense. And then, but the different methods you have for getting the how to prioritize things through time urgency, but then also how to get yourself from one zone to another zone. That is a lot of times what my clients struggle with, not when they have ADHD and then tasks things. And then the problem with my clients is that when they procrastinate sometimes on those things, they do it through binging and purging. So they like use binging and purging as this task hopping thing, right? And then it ends up not working at all. Yeah. So I don't know. Can you just like, first of all, I guess maybe it'd be helpful for our audience. What is the typical problem with people that have ADHD and then trying to understand what's urgent and what's not urgent?
Yes. So people who have ADHD actually struggle with something called executive functioning. And it's not just people with ADHD. It's also people who maybe have experienced significant trauma or have really a lot of distress in their life right now, or, are having a really hard time, haven't had a lot of sleep. So I would actually say a lot of people who binge eat, whether they've got ADHD or not, also can struggle with tasks of executive functioning. And we can go into more like exactly what that is, but two main ones into this conversation are emotional regulation and task initiation. Task initiation, task swapping. And the main thing that we're talking about, which my brain, it's just left my brain right now, is, oh yes, urgency.
Yeah, for everyone listening, Nina just woke up, so she's doing a great job.
Yeah. That's my de I haven't got through my whole coffee yet, so that's my defense right now. But essentially what happens is when we are faced with a bunch of tasks that we need to do, let's say we've got a big long to-do list, and if it's just in our head, our brains will essentially tell us that they all have equal priority and equal urgency, especially if we're stressed. And then what actually happens is that we get this feeling of stuckness where we actually can't initiate any of those tasks because they all need to be done at once. They're all urgent and you get so overwhelmed that you freeze. And then often for a lot of my ADHDers, and I'd say for your clients as well, even if they don't have ADHD who binge and purge, eating then becomes a procrastination tool because doing nothing feels bad. So at least I'm doing something right now and I can beat myself up about the food later, rather than sitting here beating myself up about not being able to do the 10 tasks that all feel urgent.
I'm like really in love with what we're talking about because I know everyone is going to relate to this, especially the like, I can't do nothing. I feel guilty about doing nothing. That feels really bad and I'm lazy. Therefore, let's binge and purge. And it's not like it's just a rational thought, right? But it becomes this thing that you do. And I always tell my clients, like, doing nothing is better. Like, just let yourself freeze if you need to. That's okay, you know, but they just, it's so unacceptable to them.
Yeah, I love to ask them if they're like, "Oh, I don't know why I had my binge or purge." I'll say, "Well, if you were not doing that, what would you be doing?" And it becomes very telling. They either go, "Oh, I don't know," and then you can instantly see there's either the uncertainty of they feeling lost, or "I don't know, but I had these all the I should have been doing my washing." I'm like, "Ah, oh, you're procrastinating." But yeah, so I guess as a part of that, we then started talking about solutions to overcoming that.
Well, you had
Have
a
you
lot of
found,
brilliant
I think
stuff.
you,
Go ahead.
I, how about you start with what you do with your clients normally? Because that was also the right thing.
Yeah, so typically, not always, but I tend to help clients a lot with organizing tasks. And some clients that actually do have ADHD, they will come to me and we'll find really quickly that they're stressed and that's why they're binge eating. They have too much on their plate. And so I'll go through their days with them and they'll give me their to-do list. And I think I was telling you, one of my clients was like, she was putting cleaning her makeup brushes and getting these tests graded as the same priority list, and the tests were due the next morning. The makeup brush is like not urgent, you know? And so I went through these tasks with her, and then I've done this with other clients of like, this is low priority, this is low priority, this is high priority. And the what I based it off of was, this is urgent in terms of time, and then this is not. And I don't think you should always try to do things based on like, this is due immediately. Like, you don't want to live your life like it's a dumpster fire, but it was a good initial first step for them.
And I think that's such a helpful way to do it, and that's kind of something that I would do with some of my clients as well, where you help them get it out of their head, because in their head they think it's all urgent, and when they're in the moment of having to do it, their stress levels are high and their brain and body and nervous system is suddenly saying everything is urgent. I love the makeup brush example, or I'll keep using that one. If that doesn't help them, because in the moment, like, they're not able to still follow through with that, the next step is really figuring out, helping them figure out what, how their brain works. So, especially with ADHD, for example, there are different reasons that we might get stuck or struggle with that task initiation. So, it might be that this person then needs to calm down, de-stress, write it all out exactly like what you did. And I sometimes use the Eisenhower matrix. If they're not able to differentiate between urgent and not urgent, it's then just when is the next thing due and how important is it? And then within that list, then understanding, are they somebody who is needs to build momentum? Because if there's someone that needs to build momentum, then it means that they need to start with small, easy tasks first. So for them, cleaning the makeup brushes first might actually be the way that they can then take the next step. So taking a minute or two, setting a timer, you're going to spend 2, 3 minutes cleaning your makeup brushes so they don't get too wrapped up and then start cleaning everything else in their bathroom, because that will often happen as well.
The timer
Pick a few
thing
easy
is
tasks that you like and
brilliant.
enjoy. And then use that momentum to start your actual task. If that person is, if that's best for them, if they need that momentum. On the flip side, organizing the urgency and regulating their nervous system first and jumping into the hard task, the main task they need to do, can also help. But the thing that I was also sharing was that if that is still challenging, and it is, like I know I personally find it so challenging to start my homework because it feels like this massive, overwhelming task, I either need to break it down into smaller sections, like if you're a rewards-based person, so that you get a big dopamine hit, a reward hormone, like not reward, but a motivating hormone hit regularly throughout the task rather than needing to do a massive task and get to it at the end. Do you know what I mean by that?
Well,
We've been
sometimes they
talking.
are just giant,
Go off.
overwhelming, and you're like, I'm not going to feel good about this till the
Yes.
very end. And those tasks are the worst.
Exactly. So makeup brushes have lots of little dopamine hits versus, grading maybe not. So breaking it up and maybe using Pomodoro. And then,
Well, I like the pickle example. That was so funny.
yes.
And when people will explain that are listening, but it's interesting. You said basically like jumping in with light, easy, or just like doing something that's kind of close to it to switch into that mode. And I was talking to a client who I don't think she has diagnosed ADHD, but definitely like some things that are similar to that. And she's a creative. And we were talking about how every Monday it's hard for her to transition between the weekend mode to then work mode. And her whole Mondays are usually just a binge and purge day because she's struggling to get into it. And I'm like, you never do work on Monday anyway. You just do it all Tuesday through Friday. So let's just use Monday as like a wash day and instead do little tasks like little minor creative things that get you into that zone rather than forcing yourself to be 100%. And that's what the pickle thing reminded me of.
Yes, exactly. That's so perfect. How does she go with that?
So we talked about this last week, and then she reported today that it actually went very well. She did not binge and purge on Monday. It was a much easier Monday. Like she let herself clean that day and get her life together and kind of transition back into work mode. And she did, she's a writer, and so she did like some editing that at the end of the day instead of trying to write creatively. And that was like a low bar task to get back into work mode, and it worked well.
Oh, that's so good that it worked. It's yeah, that's awesome when like when strategies that you use actually work pretty much immediately, right? It's
Yes.
like you just
That's a
gotta do it.
dopamine hit
And I
too,
always say to
yeah.
my clients, you're already doing it, like you're already not doing anything that day. You may as well not do it and enjoy it rather than not do it and
Right.
hate it.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of binge eating too is owning that you do just maybe need a break or you just need to do nothing or chill for a second. And instead of doing it backhandedly with your binging and purging, just do it. Like you said, you're already not working, you're already not doing anything, just don't do anything. And that can be helpful.
Also not fighting yourself so much. I think a lot of people are just constantly fighting their brain. It's like learning how your brain is working, and instead of being like, oh, I wish I was the person who just didn't procrastinate or didn't take time to do the next task, just being like, hey, it takes me a little bit of time to do that. I do procrastinate, so I'm going to find strategies to help with that or give myself some transition time instead of trying to force it, leading to you getting really worked up and stressed and then having to, cope with food.
Yeah, and taking advantages of well, this is for creative work what we do, but I feel like it's easy just to take advantage of times where I feel hyper productive, get as much as I can out of that, and then allow myself to be lazy in the interim. And it is really hard. It's hard to accept that natural part of yourself because you're like, ah, I need to keep doing things, but it, I don't know, working with yourself always seems to be better than working against yourself.
And I think that you can look at that in two ways. You can look at that as like natural rhythms of being a woman. And I think a lot of the women that I work with are really out of touch with their natural rhythms. And they'll come to me, they're like, oh, I don't know why, but this week has been terrible. I've binged and, I was doing so well and now I've binged and then I had a bad body image day. And I'm like, I know where you are in your cycle. And I know that you're getting your period in a couple of days, and that's why you're crying to me about this. And I don't want to invalidate you, but I'm just sitting there going, that's so interesting. I wonder why that's happened. What else has changed in your life? And they usually get there. And I know for a fact, next time they see me 2 weeks later, everything is fantastic because they have those natural rhythms in their body making them feel good and struggle. And over time, we start to find, like, just like you're saying, how do you work with those rhythms a little bit better with your expectations? And how do you have lower expectations, not lower, but different expectations in that PMS week where you know you're going to have more cravings, you're going to be hungrier. So, how do you set yourself up for success so you don't binge? by being extra kind and giving yourself more freedom with food.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I wonder, because you already said like some advice, but I think what helps me a lot with that week, the PMS week or whatever, I used to dread it, resist it, hated it about myself, like that I had this week basically where I was miserable. And there is such a thing as PMDD and extreme symptoms that aren't normal, but you know, being a little tired, fatigued, whatever. But then I read the book Period Power by Maisie Hill, and she talked about how that is kind of, I think, like your fall, where things are dying, things are coming down, and it's hard to accept, but you could see it as a great time to point out what you need to trim away in your life and what, like, retreating and resting. And that week before my period, I always get very hyper aware of all the things I don't like. And it's a good sign for me to change those things to the best of my ability. Like, maybe there's a relationship I don't like, or like something I'm doing that I'm like, why am I doing this? It just becomes a very immediate, like, let's not do this. And so I feel like embracing that side of your cycle is really helpful too.
Yes, 100%. I really love that. And funny you bring in relationships. I remember going through for a little while feeling like, oh, my PMS week, I feel really bad because I'm being really grumpy and taking it out on my husband. But sometimes when I think about, like, yes, sometimes it is me, but sometimes I'm like, no, I'm just now in a state where my hormones are no longer tolerating stuff that bothers me. Because in that week after, my menstrual cycle is here, I will tolerate literally anything from this man. He just needs to exist, and he's amazing. So it's kind of looking at it like that as well. So really, I love that view of it's opening your eyes to what needs change in your life. And on the topic of PMDD, it's actually very, very common in people with ADHD, and it's that I'm constantly having to talk through with my clients because we have so many sensitivities to our hormones, and because the estrogen drop in the second half of your cycle, basically that impacts all of your ADHD symptoms. So not only are they, feeling extra chaotic with their meal planning, feeling like they can't stick to it, but they're also impacted by all the other PMS hormones as well.
Oh, okay.
Sometimes for them,
Yeah, I was
I don't
gonna
know
ask,
if
like, what do
you
you do?
ever this is somewhat related, but for body image in particular, or if they're really mean to themselves and they actually can't see the other side, I think the struggle with PMDD is when you're in it, it's very hard to believe that this isn't your life and that it is a rhythm and it is going to leave. Sometimes I ask themselves to write a letter from their past self. So whilst they have the PMDD, take a moment if they can, if they have it in their capacity or when they're with me, how they're feeling, all of their beliefs, and then the following cycle, like the following half of the cycle, write a letter to that version of themselves saying things like, I know that you feel this way. And I know that right now you believe that it's never going to go away. But here I am, the future version of that version of you, telling you how great it is. And that every time they have that PMDD week, they have a read of that little note and letter to themselves. And I've heard it really helps.
That's so good.
Helps with
It
their kids.
reminds me of one thing I've always also found about cycling is just, or the cycle you have is tracking it does wonders. Like just knowing that this happens and that this is a common occurrence and there's nothing, like, of course this is happening. We've experienced it many times, that helps. But I remember one time, and this is not to say that if you're going through a really dark time, you shouldn't seek medication or help, but I was going through a super depressive phase, I think later on in 2020. And I just one day was like, you know I don't always feel this way. Like, it feels like this right now. I'm so sick of being sad. I still feel sad. I still feel dark and apathetic. But I know that there wasn't always a time where I felt this way. And I think this isn't permanent. And that helped me. Like, it helped me at least be like, all right, well, we're going to take action today. We're going to keep living our life. And then things got better pretty shortly after that. Not to say it was all contributed to that thought, but it did help.
Just simply reminding yourself it's not always going to be like this. And I think I think the hardest part of being like having binge eating disorder and bulimia is you feel like you can't imagine a life different. And so you're doing all this fighting to get out of it. And you're like, what am I fighting for? All I'm going to get to is a point where I'm no longer binging and purging, but I still hate my body. And I still hate the way that I feel about food. I'm going to be battling. And it's so hard to imagine that that's not going to be your life forever. There's a version of you that's not fighting like that. There's a version of you that's actually okay with how you look, even if you can't comprehend it.
Yeah.
I think that's such an important skill.
I'm curious how you help people get through that when they have not experienced it or seen it. And I had a moment with a client today that I think you'd find interesting, where she was talking about how she can't imagine it, but she knows that she can't. She said, "I can't have perspective on something I've never experienced before. Therefore, I at least have to show myself what it's like before I give up on it altogether." So I thought it was a really powerful statement. It's like, yeah, you can't at least give yourself the chance to see what that's like before deciding it's not for you. So yeah. But
I
how do
love
you
that.
carry people through that, like when they can't see that that's a possibility?
This is, I think, one of the hardest parts of our work. It's like the body image side, especially, and imagining a life that you've never experienced before. I guess the usual route is sharing. Sometimes I'll share some stories of other people. Sometimes I will ask them to follow other accounts and things like that. So hearing the story over and over again of I didn't think this was possible for me, and this is what it feels like. Depending on the client, I will occasionally self-disclose, and I think them hearing me say all the things that they're thinking and believing, I'll be like, there is something I say to them. I said, if I were to go back in time and visit my past self, she would take one look at me and be horrified. She would be absolutely devastated at what she saw and what she heard come out of my mouth, and she wouldn't believe me. There's nothing I could say to my past self to make me believe my current experience, because I wasn't ready and that version of me didn't exist.
Ooh, that's
I think something
powerful.
about that seems to fit with them. Yeah. Like, and I always ask them, and I'll tell them this as well. Every single client that I work with, when they get to a point where they're feeling really good, I'll say to them, what words do you have that you think that your past self would have believed you, or to describe the current experience you're having now? So I'm desperately searching for the right words because they're so hard, right? Just about all of them, they're like, there's nothing. There's nothing I could have said or done to explain this experience to me. I just have to have faith and believe that it could exist. Like, is there, could you believe that there's a version of yourself that could experience something new? That's all you need to believe. And then take the blind leap of faith.
Ooh, I love that. And I like that it takes all the confusion out of it. It stops the desperation of trying to figure out the how or what exactly you gotta think or what it's gonna be like, because you can't purely know. I feel like you could take educated guesses, but that's just about it. And the only way you'll ever really be able to figure it out is through experiencing it. And I really related to what you said personally, of just like the past me would be devastated. And I would agree, the past me would also be devastated at what she saw. And it's like, it's, I think I guess I would have words for her though. Maybe they're wrong, but I'd be like, what you think is so important right now isn't as important. And like this, the what you're thinking right now is keeping your life incredibly small, which sounds kind of mean, but it is true. Like, it's just the thoughts and belief systems she had were not her own, and it was keeping her life very small and for other people only. Yeah, but she still wouldn't have believed me.
Keeping
She
her
would have
safe.
dismissed it.
Right? That's the thing. I'm like, if sometimes you hear these questions, like if you could go back in time and, say the words that you needed to hear, I would be like a slap, like snap out of it. Oh my God. Up across the face. Shake myself.
Like, you've
But
lost
nothing
it,
would
you've given up.
have.
Yeah, absolutely.
Nothing would have sunk in, which is where time and making that choice. And I think I saw one of your posts about this is I say, my cousin, the only thing I can't teach you is how to make that choice. You need to choose every single day that this is what you're going to fight for. You don't even know what it is, but you just know that where you are feels like crap and you don't want to stay there. So you want to fight to get away from that, even if you don't know what you're going towards just yet.
Yeah, it's like the immediate, it's that urgency, right? The immediate threat and immediate or for sure thing. The certainty you do have is right now you're miserable. And if you keep doing the same thing, you will continue to be miserable, if not worse. It's going to get worse. It's not going to get better, right? So you can run away from that at the very least. And then I think as you start to change, then you have more reasons to keep on changing, you know what you're working towards too. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is, well, actually, I was gonna say one last thing and we'll move on. I found it helpful to listen to people that were doing cool stuff in their life. It wasn't related to recovery at all. They're just starting businesses or helping people. Well, I remember this one woman who she became paralyzed from the waist down and created a whole new life for herself. And I just, that story really stuck with me because it's like, man, I want a bigger life like that. I don't, and I feel it didn't, I didn't immediately recover after that, but I was like, I don't think bulimia has a place in that, whatever these people are doing. And that helped me a
Yeah.
lot too.
I love that. And I guess on that sort of pathway, for me, it was not so much like that. It was when I was traveling, and I know this is coming from a very, very privileged place, but when I was traveling with my family, and I'd be on the beach, for example, I'd be like, what would it feel like to be here as somebody who wasn't self-conscious of my body? How would I act? How would I present myself? And I would put the towel down. I would just be in my bathers and I would just put on a persona while I was there because nobody's going to see me ever again of pretending that I was confident in my body. And I was like, nothing terrible happened. I didn't hide behind my towel and nothing happened. Why can't I just do it at home? So I guess that idea of a different life, a different version of you, and imagining that.
Practicing it a little bit. I like it. On that note,
Yeah.
actually, I usually ask people this in the beginning, but I like a conversation in the beginning. So, what, tell us your story. Like, what, you don't have to share, but what awful thing happened to you, and how did it translate into an eating disorder, and how did you get to where you are now?
I didn't realize how much of my story was actually related to ADHD until my hindsight. So I didn't have like something profound in my life that happened to me, even though I can tell, like I can pinpoint the exact moment I started being obsessed with my body and food. But all through high school, I had quite a hard time with friends. I got bullied a lot. I got called ugly a lot. And so through that, I developed like a really low self-esteem and I struggled a lot. What I didn't realize that is a part of that area. That's when a lot of ADHD comes to be. And that's when all of my symptoms started coming in and everything that I had held as valuable in myself, which was overachieving, I was in like all the academic classes, that all started to crumble apart. So I went from being the really smart little girl who was doing all the extracurriculars, got to high school, struggled with my mental health, developed ADHD symptoms, was no longer able to engage in school like I used to, and all of my sense of self crumbled. And so this led me down a path of just coping in lots of different unhelpful ways, as you do as a child. So I went down different paths of self-harm through, partying with friends, through dating lots of men, that sort of stuff, which I didn't realize that all of them were in and of themselves different versions of coping tools and escapism. The exact moment, and it's not even that profound, that I started getting interested in trying to lose weight and dieting was I was in a change room and I saw some cellulite and I had realized that I had gained weight. And so I had my own little moment where I suddenly decided I was going to be really into fitness and nutrition. And somebody who used to hate sports became like fell in love with like I guess by yourself exercise, weights in the gym. I had a personal trainer. I met a personal trainer, and he was the first one who said to me, he's like, oh, maybe you should try some fitness modeling. That would, I feel like that would
Oh
work for you.
no.
Yeah, like, oh gosh, I feel like going back to him, but like that was a silly thing to say.
That was so
So he
silly of
started getting me
you.
into,
Gosh. Yeah.
right? I was already like obsessed with dieting and trying to lose weight, and he would have known that. And while I was at the gym, I actually met somebody who was also really into the gym. I became a really obsessive and we became really close friends and we actually ended up dating. Throughout this process, I became more obsessive with quote unquote eating healthy. But in actual fact, what was happening was that I was trying to eat less and less and less. So at one point, I was like trying to eat 800 calories a day and intermittent fast and do keto dieting. And in my head, I was 100% convinced that I was right about my nutrition knowledge and everybody else needed me to educate them. And you see this on social media all the time. All of these people, I see them, I'm like, you are me when I started.
And a lot of people don't know
As I
that they're disordered and they are promoting it, which is like they're not bad people. They're just really convinced that they are right.
And it became my new coping tool. And I know that you would see this with your clients as well. Obsessing about dieting and being really amazing with food and exercise became my coping tool and became my identity that I wrapped myself up in it. While I was into bodybuilding, and I made friends with this guy, we actually ended up dating. And that was probably where I went downhill really, really fast. Now, no hate to this man. He genuinely wasn't trying to be hurtful on purpose, and he didn't mean to feed into my eating disorder. But when I would say to him, like, I was feeling bad about my body, or I had gained weight, or something like that, he would make comments like, haha, why don't you just stick your fingers down your throat? Or why don't you just, like, why don't
I
you
don't
just go
know.
for a
I don't know if
run?
it's not wasn't purposeful. Like, you know, I don't know. Anyway, continue. Sorry.
He that was his humor in general, like very sort of like dry, snarky, like I don't know, that was just his style. And so I was very stubborn at that point. I was secretly binging already and he didn't know. So I was really struggling with my weight. My weight was fluctuating up, fluctuating down, and yo-yoing up and down a lot. And then I was a little bit like, you know what, maybe I will. And so I did. I also started purging in the hopes that at least if I binged, I could purge afterwards and undo, you know, quote unquote, undo my binge. But as we both know, that doesn't actually work. And all that happened was that my yo-yoing just intensified. And if anything, I was no longer able to lose weight. Purging then became my excuse for binging. Like I will just binge. It's fine to binge because I can purge, even when I wanted to stop purging. And yeah, I think you've done a few posts on this, which are really
It
important.
like the purging becomes the excuse then to binge, or because you're going to purge, you might as well binge, or because you're going to purge, you have to binge. And then, like, it feeds into it. But yeah, that's just whether it's intentional or not, it's a good example of being around the wrong influence of people can take you downhill. Even if you have a strong mind, like I was talking to someone the other day, and I realized, like, even though I disagree with them, I think I have to stop being around them because it's just I know that opinion's going to infect my mind at some point, and I can't be bothered with it, you know?
I guess in the gym culture, on that point, it's like so many people are adopting the same mindset that's unhelpful. So you're being basically indoctrinated in this very culty thinking where they talk about, you know, your cheat meals and like that's normal. And it's just planned binges that everybody's engaging with and, you know, laughing about and think it's funny and silly. And it's like so many people are hurting in that space. But yeah. This relationship became very toxic. My self-esteem really, really plummeted. I really started to believe that if I didn't lose weight, that he wasn't going to find me attractive and that I was worthless. And at some point, and I don't know if I don't know how TMI I can get,
You can get super
but
TMI. That's fine.
I was secretly binging, secretly purging, and my turning point was needing to call him, and he was a plumber, needing to call him and on the phone panicking, terrified because I had purged into the shower and it had blocked the shower. And I was so terrified that somebody would find out because I said was still living with my parents at that point, and I had to call him to ask him how to fix it and explain to him why it happened. And in that moment, I realized I was like, oh my gosh, someone could have found out. What if I had to explain this to my parents? And there's no way that I was going to be able to face that. It's like, I need to do something.
It's a good real moment.
Like literally, finally a moment of reality. I was like, I have a real problem. Actually, I don't know. I can, this story can keep panning out. So stop me if you want a time limit on
Well,
this, but
I think it's
I
just
do.
I'm trying to comment on I have up until the hour, and I think again it's like their relationship thing is it sucks because it we wanted to talk about this originally, how being in the wrong situation, and I see a lot of people in toxic relationships and they just consistently blame themselves. and they don't understand that it's really like they're around a person who, whether they're being intentional with it or not, is influencing them in a way. And I don't know, it's like the more and more people just remove themselves from them those situations, the better they get. So I'm kind of curious for you, did you recover in this relationship or out of it?
I started my recovery in it. So I started seeking help, went to the doctors, finally like confessed what had happened and what I was doing. And he wanted me to see a psychologist instead of a dietitian. I freaked out, never got support again, started doing my own research to recover. And through that process, realized I could not be with him throughout this. He was just feeding into my negative self-talk. So we ended up breaking up. And from there, my recovery really accelerated.
That's okay. Really quickly, because I do want to talk about your recovery and what steps you did. And I will also want to ask you, like, what advice you give to people. But I see people, a lot of people in just bad situations, work relationships, romantic relationships, or just environments. And it's hard for them to leave. Like, they know it's bad for them and they know it's not good, but there's this hesitancy. What helped you? I know you were getting the help of a psychologist, but is there anything in particular that helped you take that step to get out of your comfort zone and leave?
This is going to sound really silly. I got a dog.
Oh, that's good.
But I want to ask the question back to you in the context of clients in a moment. But basically, when I was with my partner at the time, he was my best friend at first, and he very quickly became one of my only friends because my eating disorder had kept me so distant from the other people in my life. I actually had to quit my job and I lost a lot of friends at some point because my binging and purging had gotten so bad. It was interfering with my work and interfering with my social group. And so he was one of my only friends. And so leaving him, even though I really wanted to for a long time and saw he was toxic for a long time, was really hard because I was going to feel lonely. And that made me very scared. And getting a dog helped me not feel so lonely. And I think I pretty much got my dog. And within a few weeks, I was like, anyway, I am going to do it. I can't
That's
do
awesome.
this anymore. And just hung out with my dog for 6 months.
Oh, having support systems of every kind during at leaving any toxic situation is a must. And having a dog is a valid support system as well. Maybe not the only support system you need, but it's something.
But the biggest bit of advice is, yes, it's going to be hard, but it's nowhere near as hard as staying. It's going to be hard in the short term, but so much better in the long term. However, I guess I want to ask you, have you had experiences with clients where they have been in a relationship that has been really obviously making their disorder worse? And how do you manage that?
Well, one person in our first group program, and she was in a very toxic work environment where she's a professional athlete, and they were constantly encouraging her to keep her weight low or lose more weight, and would punish people that didn't lose weight. And then they knew about her eating disorder too, and they still kept pushing her to do that. So through the support of the group, and then another one of the group members, fortunately, was also a former athlete and told her point blank, like, hey, they don't care about you. They're just going to use you till you give up. So it depends on what you want. And this person had to make the decision of, like, I don't want to do this thing that's going to put me at risk further. And if I stay like with people that don't care about me, what's the point? And so she ended up leaving, which was hard for her for sure, but she was much happier after doing that. And then I think with one-on-one clients, when I notice it, you don't want to blatantly say, hey, that situation's bad. Did you know that? Because that's like, they're going to be resistant. And like, they feel also, especially if you're in a, I think, romantic relationship that you understand is toxic, there's a lot of shame because you feel stupid and you feel like you should have known better. And like, something's wrong with you. You should have made it work somehow. So I think what's better is to say, like, point out things like, you know, maybe they're not being intentional, but these things that are happening maybe aren't necessarily normal, and you just might want to consider it. And like, and then also just pointing out to them, like, whatever the reason that this is happening is, this is how it's impacting you, and just kind of giving them the facts of, like, this is what you're doing because of this thing. And then I think sometimes it's helpful to be like, okay, try it in this situation. But if they are really making an effort and then the situation, like they can't get out of it because of that, then I think they try to take steps to change it.
Yeah, it's a really, really tough one, isn't it? Especially if they can't leave, especially if they're feeling really stuck. I know, I think another really hard situation is when they are so scared their weight gain throughout their healing. Like some people do gain weight, some people don't, some people stay the same. But let's say this particular person, she was gaining a bit of weight, but she was also dealing with a lot of trauma in her background as well. And her biggest fear was that her partner was no longer going to find her attractive and want to leave her. And unfortunately, he was just constantly giving her feedback that this was true. They thankfully did end up not staying together because from the start, I was like, this person is not right for you. But the hardest thing is like hearing their fears, sometimes knowing that it might be true and still being like, but it's still not you. This person, it's not even about the weight. It's about that this person wasn't there for you, not holding space for you in your healing, and has decided that that's more important than anything else. And that's not the kind of person you want to have in your life. Someone where you're constantly fearing that if your body changes or if you become ill, that they're then going to see you as less valuable. And I just wish that people could really see that. Like, stop wondering if he likes you and start wondering if you like that about him.
Ooh, yeah, that's the power move, and that's the modern woman move. But like, it is true when people they're so obsessed with trying to meet this person's criteria, and I think especially as women, we're conditioned to be desirable, right? To want to have the desire of other people and be socially acceptable. But you think about it, if the roles were reversed and your partner, the person that I am and the person I think you are, partner gains weight for whatever reason, you love the person. It's unconditional, right? And that is not a factor. And so then that you would lower yourself to someone who can't see past weight is just, or views it as a flaw at all, right? It's not even something to look past, but like views it as that. It's probably not someone you want to be around. And just because they think that doesn't mean they're correct, obviously. It's coming from very misinformed, controlling perspectives.
I think when you've been through this and you also come out the other side and you start dating again, you become a lot more clearer about what values you have in somebody. So I know my current husband, I don't mean current husband, I was meant to say my, because I said my past
I
boyfriend,
know,
not my current husband, my only husband. we actually had a conversation not that long ago, and I said to him, I just want to make sure that you really know this, that if you were to ever, I think I was telling him a story about one of my clients actually, like not telling them the deep and personal, but saying, oh, it's really sad. My client's getting a lot of pressure from her husband to change her body size, and she's currently in a really dark place with her relationship with food and body, and she has a eating disorder, and that's really sad. And I turned to him and I was like, you know, if you had ever put pressure on me to lose weight, and that was something that I was either not willing to or not able to do, and you kept pressuring me, that would be a deal breaker for me. Like I would not put up with that, and I would not stay. You would not have to stay with me, and I would understand if you didn't want to be with me, that's fine. But that pressure would be a deal breaker.
Good
And I
for
said,
you.
wouldn't that be the same for you? If I pressured you to lose weight, would you not find that a deal breaker? And he said, no. He said, if you wanted me to lose weight, I would want to do anything I could to lose that weight so that you wouldn't leave me because of that, because then I would feel like a piece of shit. And I was like, that absolutely broke my heart because this is a very confident man. Like the one of the most confident people I know. In fact, a lot of my confidence came from him because I was like, if he can just be so confident and love himself so much, why can't I? And I started almost loving
Being with the
myself
right
to
person will do
spite it. Like,
that.
yeah. So it just goes to show like how much this fear of being accepted is ingrained in what people look like, right? In our culture, and how much it impacts us on such a deep level.
Yeah, well, it's everywhere. And then to find someone you think you love, and then that you get it's a conditioning tool, right? But you get so desperate for that affection and love that you will do anything to keep it, right? And letting that go is never easy, but when you do let it go, some one of my other clients today, he was said he's in kind of a toxic work situation, and he told me today he's like, I've let go of the outcome, so I can walk away now. I'm gonna try to walk away with a better outcome, but if it's I lose everything from it, I'm okay with that. And I was like, that's where you find true power, though, is when you let go of the outcomes and you can just walk away, right? And it's some of the hardest stuff you have to do, but it gives you all the power back for sure, instead of being desperate for that and trying to conform into whatever. Anyways, we got into like a really side tangent. Didn't talk about your recovery, but what I like to end the podcast off this way. How, if you could give advice to anyone out there struggling right now, you've given a lot, but any advice to anyone that's struggling right now, thinking that they can't recover, what would it be?
I know this is very boring advice, but you have to make the choice every day that you're going to fight regardless of if you know what the outcome is. You have to really clearly define where I'm at right now is not good, and I don't want to be here for the rest of my life. Like, can you picture yourself being 80 years old on your deathbed, still thinking and feeling the same way around food? And if any part of you goes, no, like that's so silly. Of course, I don't want to be binging and purging when I'm 80. Then you ask yourself, okay, well, at what that means that at some point you are going to have to do something about it. So any delay in that is you choosing to live in this place of struggle longer, because it's gonna clearly inevitably happen that you work through it. It won't magically go away on its own.
Ooh, that wasn't simple. That was powerful advice. And I do think I like that you said to choose every day. And sometimes you have to re-choose every day. It's not like you choose one day and or you choose 1 hour sometimes, then you should choose again. And it's super hard. And then I like that it's not gonna magically happen. Even like the clients I've had where they just needed to eat more food. And then that magically took away the binging. Sometimes that does happen. They still had to choose to eat more food and work through that. It was an intentional thing that happened.
Exactly.
Well, thank you so much for being on here. You gave really good advice. I feel like we could talk for a lot longer, but I gotta cut it off here. But anywhere, how can people find you and work with you?
So people can find me on my Instagram page. I've just changed it. I need to actually look up what the name is. I always get it wrong. It is nina.binge.adhd.nutrition. I offer support for people who are feeling really out of control with food and need help with calming that chaos around food without so much overwhelm and guilt. The main people that I work with are people who struggle with binge eating and feel out of control with food, but I also work a lot with people with ADHD and now have a group program specifically for that.
So excited, and it needs more of it. I love also that you said in the beginning, sometimes you can have executive function issues if you are just stressed. And because I feel like there's a lot of, which is good, there's a lot of ADHD content online now. At least I'm in that part of the niche, probably because of what I do. But then it's like, oh, do I have ADHD or do I like, but sometimes like you can just be super stressed and then your brain is functioning that way. But I like a lot of your content too. Obviously, that's why I brought you on here. But for anyone listening, definitely go check Nina out. She is a very great resource and a lot of your clips on Instagram are just excellent. So yeah.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you. I appreciate that. And I've loved coming on and I've loved meeting you and chatting to you. I've always watched your content and I thought the way that you hit some of these pain points, you just do it so well in such a conversational tone and you just are a master at hitting those tough topics. So well done.
Thanks. Thanks. It's funny because whenever you make content, you never feel like it. You're like, I am just wrecking ball this, but I'm communicating all the same. Like I'm fighting to communicate. But thank you. Anyways, we'll
Of
wrap it
course.
up. Yeah, bye everyone listening.
All right. See you later, everyone. Thanks for listening.